working on?
Well, now, the problem, Mr.
Allen.
Allen.
Yes.
Concerns the true nature of the distinction between poetry and history, if any.
But now, I've never thought of you as a poet. You're an economist, as we were saying, and all the books agree, in fact, that you were the founder of the science of economics.
Pooh. That's your idea, sir. And the idea of all those academic hacks who are forever chopping up the living creature of wisdom into bits. Then they stuff those dead bits into boxes they call departments. Departments of speech, call me a rhetorician. Schools of law, call me an authority on jurisprudence. Departments of philosophy, call me a philosopher. Political science departments, call me a political scientist. And schools of the arts, call me an aesthetician. One has my toe, another my elbow, and another my left ear.
What are you then?
I am a student, sir. An everlasting student of life. You see, there's no subject which you can study competently without studying all the others.
Yes.
It's because we fail to realize that we have doctors with no sense of the soul, lawyers with no sense of justice, and politicians who have lost their recollection of human suffering. Mm-hmm. No wonder the whole system simply falls apart.
Yes.
Do you know the central problem in economics today, Mr. Allen?
I have theories.
The central problem in economics today, sir, is this. There is no longer any poetry in work.
Well, perhaps we can get back to that. But first, if we may, a bit of personal information. Now, you were born in the year 1723.
Aye, in the town of Kirkcaldy, County Fife, Scotland.
Big town, was it?
Oh, no. A population of about 1,500 people.
Is this story here true about your being kidnapped at the age of 3 or 4?
Oh, aye. It was all quite curious.
Who kidnapped you?
A band of gypsies.
Really?
Oh, yes. An uncle of mine managed to trace the scoundrels, and when they were being pursued, they abandoned me. One of my biographers has said, I would have made a very poor gypsy.
Your sense of humor reminds me that in our modern day, some comedians, I don't, but some comedians tell what are called Polish jokes.
Polish jokes?
Yes, jokes at the expense of Poles, Polish people.
Oh.
Now, up to about 40 years ago in our country, one often heard Scotch jokes.
What was the point of them?
Well, the Scots, it was said, were a tight-fisted race, loath to spend a penny if they could avoid it. Now, how do you suppose that idea became common?
Well, you know, it's not at all clear to me that we Scots are stingy or miserly.
No.
But we do have a good head for money. the Scots have been good businessmen, good bankers.
That's interesting because some of my wife's ancestors were Scots and they were bankers.
Consistent evidence, but not conclusive.
Yes. Well, anyway, you entered the University of Glasgow in
1737, sir.
Yes, and how old were you at the time?
14.
Now, I understand that after 4 years at Glasgow, you went on to an even greater university, Oxford.
Oh, sir, you have made an important error which I must take the trouble to correct.
Oh?
The University of Glasgow in my youth was the center of what later became known as the Scottish Enlightenment. Aye, it was a stimulating center of thought and learning. When I later went to Oxford, I was very disappointed.
Really?
Oh, I found Oxford to be an intellectual desert.
My goodness.
My years there, consequently, were spent largely educating myself.
Mm.
But far from encouraging my intellectual development, the authorities at Oxford on occasion interfered with it.
How'd they do that?
Well, in one instance, by confiscating my copy of David Hume's A Treatise on Human Nature.
Really? But my goodness, Hume is so important a figure in the development of thought that we hope one day soon to have him as a guest on our program.
Oh, I hope you do. He was a remarkable man. But in my time, his works were considered atheistic, dangerously radical.
I see.
Where was I?
Forget.
I was fortunate enough after graduating from Oxford to begin a series of public lectures in Edinburgh,
mm-hmm.
The success of which led to my appointment at the age of 27 to the post of Professor of Logic at Glasgow University. The following year, I transferred to another job on the faculty, which paid a bit better, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The professorship of moral philosophy.
If I may, I'll start bringing out some of our other guests. You know, as I think back over the list of illustrious guests who have appeared on our programs in the last 3 years, it occurs to me that most of them have been able personally to change the world. And when you stop to think how many billions populate our planet, the vast expanse of the Earth, and the general difficulty of getting anything of importance done at all, it's remarkable that an